Doing this not necessarily just to brief the school board, because you've been receiving some updates throughout the summer, but to also brief our community on our preparedness for probably both seasonal flu as well as the swine flu. So, Fred Ellison.
Good evening. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Fred Ellis. I'm the director of the Office of Safety and Security, and I think everyone knows Kim Dockery, the assistant superintendent of the Department of Special Services. It's our pleasure to be here tonight to provide you an update on the influenza pandemic involving the H1N1, and again, some information on the seasonal flu virus also. The current situation of what we're looking at in terms of influenza activity, the World Health Organization, as you know, issued a pandemic classification in June of this year. They have monitored influenza activity in the southern hemisphere over the summer, where it has been quite active in many countries. Summer camps in the United States have experienced outbreaks of influenza. And currently, rates of influenza are higher than normal for this time of year. Some parts of the United States are still having intense activity. For example, some of the universities that have been in the newspapers of late. Based on CDC estimates, Virginia has likely had over 20,000 cases in the state. H1N1 makes up more than 97% of all influenza A viruses, and the CDC anticipates that novel H1N1 viruses will continue. They will co-circulate with regular seasonal influenza viruses over our typical influenza season. So we do anticipate more illness than we saw in the spring, more school-based outbreaks, because influenza is typically transmitted more easily in the fall and the winter. More communities may be affected, reflecting a wider transmission with differences in disease burden across the country. This particular virus, the H1N1 virus, appears to be more contagious than seasonal influenza, and a younger age group has been affected than seen during seasonal influenza. The illness is presenting with a wide spectrum of illness, although most cases seem to be mild and self-limited. However, this H1N1 virus has a tendency to cause more severe and lethal infections in people with underlying medical conditions. While the potential severity of this virus really does remain uncertain because of the virus's tendency to mutate, current severity is unchanged as we speak today from the spring of 2009. So the situation really is continuing to evolve literally daily with new information on a continual basis. We're really going to have to be very fluid in our approach in dealing with this. As Dean Tisdad is quoted as saying, we're going to have to be light on our feet. Flexibility is definitely going to be required as we continue to deal with this event. A collaboration continues with a variety of agencies, both locally and nationally. FCPS has had staff attend prior CDC pandemic conferences. We continue to monitor their guidance. We participate and monitor Department of Education, Virginia Department of Health, and of course the Fairfax County Health Department. We also, obviously, we work with the Fairfax County Office of Emergency Management. In terms of the H1N1 vaccine production, it does continue. The initial volumes, however, look like they're going to be limited. The distribution right now looks like it will be sometime in October. There's a slight chance that some portion of serum will be available in possibly late September, but still a little bit early to say yet. The initial targeting of these groups to receive the initial vaccinations are really based on production and those identifying those groups that are at higher risk for complications. And, of course, obviously our inoculation planning continues with the Fairfax County Health Department. To give you an idea of the tiered group targets of individuals that we would like to get inoculated as soon as the H1N1 vaccine becomes available. They were basically looking at two scenarios originally, one with an expectation or a hope, rather, that the U.S. Would receive or be able to produce about 160 million doses initially. As you've been probably following in the news, that doesn't look like it's going to be the case. It's probably going to be closer to 40 million. So there will be a subset of that targeted initial targeted group. Give an idea, that subset will include pregnant women, persons who live with or provide care for infants aged 6 months or under, healthcare and emergency medical services personnel who have direct contact with patients or infectious material, children ages 6 months to 4 years, children and adolescents aged 5 to 18 years who have medical complications that put them at higher risk for influenza-related complications. The seasonal flu vaccine is becoming available. I've seen advertisements for Safeway, Walgreens, so it is becoming out in the community. FCPS is providing free seasonal flu shots for employees being coordinated through the Human Resources Department, and those are expected to be available sometime in September in localities, in different locations are scheduling clinics through this fall. All community members are highly encouraged to receive this seasonal flu shot. And to remind folks, there will be basically, in terms of the H1N1, it looks like that's going to be a series of two shots. So when we're thinking of flu shots this fall, we're talking three shots. One is the seasonal flu, and then two for the H1N1 when it becomes available.
So we've been talking about protocols for our students, and our first is stay at home if you're ill. Students should remain at home 24 hours after a fever has ended. Students presenting with flu-like symptoms at school will be isolated and supervised, so that's one of the things schools are wrestling with, to find a separate space, because you still have to have a health room for medications and care of injured, but you also want to separate those kids who are exhibiting flu-like symptoms. We've already, Mr. O'Neill has already distributed the surgical masks, so students who can tolerate that when they're ill and waiting for a parent to pick them up, we have those in the schools already with others available. We're getting ready to send out a keep-in-touch message to parents so that they'll have more information if their child is one in one of the high-risk populations about working with their own doctor in those situations. And we've also met with the principals of the schools where our high-risk students are. So the students that we have that are more medically fragile and are pregnant teens, we've met with those principals to talk about plans for that those students. Protocol for staff, same thing. Stay home if you're ill 24 hours after fever has ended. We'll also have no requirement of a doctor notice for flu-like illnesses, so that we don't send people to the doctor for those things. Staff that are ill will be asked, encouraged to go home, and then use of the mask until they're able to leave. We also have information on the website for staff about high-risk populations, and a Fairfax All message will be going out to them in the next couple of days. In terms of preventive measures that we met with all the principals on August 11th to give them an update about the situation and talk to them about, we know that the isolation does bring up a lot of difficulties because not all schools have the space to do those things. So we're working with schools on an individual basis and trying to support them when needed. We also are encouraging our staff to really use our HD SIMS monitoring system. And that is our school illness monitoring, and that's a daily attendance that's entered, and it gives the health department the ability to look at alerts in our system and monitor for different surges in illness. Our cleaning protocols we went over with the principals, our cleaning is the routine. There's nothing additional necessary, and we're emphasizing hand washing and putting all of the health curriculum in the first 2 weeks of school. Liz Payne worked with everyone to really say, that's what we have now, the preventative measures of cover your cough, cover your sneeze, and washing your hands. We're also doing a lot of work with Barbara Hunter and working with Lori Knickerbocker so that the messaging through our Channel 21 and all of the websites, the Keep in Touch, we're always updating people and giving them access to information. In terms of academic continuity, all the schools are also being encouraged to have teachers keep their Blackboard sites update for their personal classes. But in addition, Instructional Services is working on our Blackboard pandemic site, but we're calling it Keep on Learning. And it will only be turned on in a case where you have a number of students that if we had a lot of students sick at home, or if we had a case where we needed to have portions or populations of school of students that couldn't have access to school. We're also making sure that schools are looking at what they would do for packets and being able to distribute those. A lot of schools started thinking about that in the spring, and principals had come up with ideas for how you could have things at the local library and also places in the cafeteria by grade level where parents could come in to pick up materials. So they are looking at for those students that don't have internet access as well.
In terms of school closures, I know this was a hot topic earlier this year in the spring when school closures were more of a on the table, so to speak, in terms of responses. The CDC recognizes the social and economic impacts of school closures, so they really are stressing trying to keep schools open as much as possible. And are allowing the localities to make school closure decisions based on what they see. So that school closures or dismissals could affect specific populations of students, they could affect individual schools, or it could be a division-wide type issue for those. Any of the school closures would be done after close consultation with the Fairfax County Health Department, after much discussion. It would either be on an epidemiological basis or on an operational capability basis. And what I mean by that is, for instance, if Mr. Tisdet loses 30 or 40% of his bus drivers, we'd be pretty much out of business. So we would have to think about a school closure in such a case. And as Kim mentioned, we did meet with the staff, the principals, at those Kilmer, Key, Bryant, Mountain View, where they do have some high-risk populations there. In terms of emergency management issues, we've been doing several things over the summer, one of which, of course, is updated our pandemic emergency operations plan, which we're required to do every year. That plan does have a continuity of operations component built into it, in terms of identifying lines of succession, essential functions, non-essential functions, key personnel, those kinds of things. There's also a request by the state, Virginia Department of Health, to provide daily student and staff absentee data so that they can track absentees across the state. And it's my understanding that that is being worked on as we speak so we can comply with that request. In the event that we do have closures, there are some notification requirements to the Centers for Disease Control and the U.S. Department of Education, which we're prepared to do if necessary. With that, entertain any questions.
I have Mr. Center first.
Thank you. Mr. Charles, and I don't know if you know the answer to this one. If not, if you can get back to me. There's a certain percentage of our population that has kinds of immunodeficiencies, and they vary, you know, in great detail. Does H1N1 potentially impact that part of our population in any greater, give them any greater risk? And if so, are we planning on, in our communications, alerting folks to that?
Yes, sir, it sure does. Actually, the list of Those who are at a higher risk for complications involved with H1N1 include those that have chronic pulmonary, including asthma, cardiovascular, except hypertension, renal, cognitive, neurological, neuromuscular, and some of these other medical terms I'm not sure I could pronounce, including diabetes, immunosuppression, including that caused by medications or HIV. And in terms of notifications, that was the keep in touch that Kim alluded to earlier that is on the verge of being sent out.
We have about 20,000 students that are on our medical alert list. So we work with the health department. We're sending out this keep in touch message so that parents of those students begin to think about these things. But the health department also really, when we are talking about vaccine, those are the places that they'll be looking first.
Mr. Gooman?
I was looking at the preventive measure slide, and I just was wondering if the health department is going to have any direct communication with students, such as assemblies or anything like a protocol like that, if that's going to happen at certain high schools or elementary schools or middle schools.
You know, I think we asked them, and it'll be interesting, did you have anything on the morning news show about wash your hands or prep or health?
We had, if you have a cough, cover it, and that was about how much the first day. So I don't know if there's anything extended past that.
Yeah, I don't know if the health department is specifically going to reach out and do some kind of initiatives in the school. We've obviously worked with them for several months now on making sure our strategies are appropriate, our posters. Matter of fact, we on our website, you can link to the Fairfax County Health Department to see their posters. They actually have posters in Spanish. Schools are encouraged to use those. And in terms of the messaging that we've done in terms of keep in touch, the announcements, the information on our website has all been done in close collaboration with the health department. And, of course, you do have the school aid, the school health aides, the public health nurses in the schools, but I'm not aware of a specific program.
So it's primarily based off of high school administration to implement anything?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Hone?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kim, come up to the podium, because you're both very important to this discussion. I really want to thank you both for having such a clearly laid out plan. This has been an issue that I've been sort of waking up at night going, oh, my God, what happens if all the teachers get sick? Didn't think about what would happen if all the bus drivers got sick. Because of the way that this disease is actually impacting young adults, I'm actually more worried about our staff getting, you know, put out of commission than our kids, who are apparently, the kids are actually more resilient except for those with special needs. Instructional continuity. I am particularly concerned about those kids who don't have computer access, so I'm pleased to hear that you have a plan. Kids who are students with IEPs or have disabilities, kids that are sort of not sort of caught in the mainstream and their extra needs, how are we going to deal with academic continuity for those kids?
Well, when we met with the schools of Key, Kilmer, Bryant, that was some of the planning that we did. And for instance, our students that are at ILF is not letting the students go into the schools because of the risk, so we're putting more homebound instruction into ILF. So we're working within special ed to look at those kinds of things and, you know, talking with people about how our teachers would be going to students as opposed to congregating at school.
Mm-hmm. Continuity of learning and, again, trying to get the packets out, having the Blackboard plan, mm-hmm. And all of those things requires a lot of self-direction from kids and their parents and caregivers. I can envision situations where our kids will come back from leave and perhaps will not have been as self-directed as they needed to be, or they might have been just too sick to keep up. What's the plan for, if any, for when the kids sort of rematriculate? And you may have a situation where out of 30 kids, 10 were out, and they're kind of behind.
We talked to principals about that because there's going to have to be flexibility because you could have a school that's not closed but a group of students that have been out for a period of time. And I think it's another place where we'll be looking at the flexibility of our extended contracts, and intervention means intervention, and reaching, meeting kids' needs means whoever needs that at that time.
Just because I'm also thinking about the technology and what's available to us.
I think one of the things that we discovered with Project Lift this summer is we had a summer reading program, mm-hmm. and we found that a phone call from either a call-out system or the teachers on extended contracts engaged the kids and had them more likely to increase in their reading skills. So we've learned a lot of things about how we can use technology, and if we're teachers at our home, we still have access to that technology, or teachers could be in school using some of that technology.
And I particularly love that because it's phones, not computers. And when you look at disparities in computer usage that still exist, phones are, especially even cell phones, frankly, the ability to even send a text message to a parent or a child to remind them to do their work. I did not know that we were doing that, so
hey,
I am delighted to hear
that. Schools were using
that
this summer and using their call-out system to say the book is coming and don't forget to use your reading strategies and answer the postcard. So that was going on all summer in over 100 schools.
And I will love to hear a report on that another time. So thank you.
Ms. Wilson?
Thank you. A couple of things. I am, by the way, my Keep in Touch is signed up. I get the voicemail messages from all the schools in my district about don't forget that. And it really is very powerful. Because all of a sudden it's like, who's calling from that number? And it's like, don't forget. So it is a really great thing. Before I ask my question, you and I know, but you might tell the rest of the board and the viewing audience what ILIF is.
And it's our nursing home for high needs students. Thank you.
If there is one message that we send home to parents tonight, that is that parents have got to be prepared if the school calls and says, your child is sick, come get them. That is going to be a huge issue for single parents, for parents where both child work, for families where both parents work, to be able to have a plan, to be able to come home, pick up that child, and then have daycare arrangements or arrangements for that child for the duration of the illness, which is normally about 5 days. I think there are going to be a lot of parents who are going to get that phone call and are going to be shocked about the fact that they have to come get their child out of school and they have got to make those arrangements. And anything we can do to send that message home again and again and again, I think is going to be worthwhile. In talking to some of my principals over the summer, they've told me that there have been cases, not with the H1N1 virus, but when they call a parent to say your child is sick, a parent has said, sorry, I'm at work, you'll just have to hold the child until I can come home at the end of the day. And this is going to be a huge problem for our schools. I mean, somebody was saying that their alternative plan is to turn the library into the clinic if they have more kids who come down sick during the day than the clinic can handle. That is probably my biggest concern through all of this, is to tell the parents how important it is to have that backup plan in place. And I can tell you from not being able to raise my arm a whole lot more than that I've already gotten my seasonal flu shot, that I am an at-risk population, so it's one thing I do.
Add to that is to have all the phone numbers updated and
true.
Current so that we can call and we can reach you. And for every crisis situation, family need to have a lot of backup plans. We saw in the spring that families in some districts actually banded together, so they had sick kids and they would somebody would come and pick them up and you could share that care. We need to have multiple plans.
Ms. Strauss?
There was a press release just before the meeting started that indicated that the flu vaccine may be effective with just one inoculation that came out just as our meeting was starting. But we'll wait to see whether or not that actually proves to be the case. I know what they're saying is that if it's effective with just one inoculation, the vaccine will go farther. But we don't know yet, but just that's out there in the chattering class.
The one question that I have, and curious, as this comes through, do we have any idea of the time frame, how long it would last? Because isn't it Montgomery? One of the community colleges in Maryland is experiencing a huge wave coming through. In other words, will this last a month, 2 months, 3 months, all year long? Do we have any idea?
Historically, they've come in waves. So, for instance, we've seen the first wave in the spring. The second wave, we're anticipating this fall. In terms of the lengths of those waves, anywhere from 2 to 3, 4 months, could be quite a while.
So then are we to expect that, I mean, we're a large county, a large school division. It'd be nice if, as it comes through, you know, we sort of have a two-month period and we're done. But is that not, I can see Kim shaking her head, that's not necessarily what will happen. We may be struggling with this until it all passes the northern hemisphere.
Yeah, we really could. Viruses are particularly adept at mutating. This one is particularly contagious and infectious. So as long as it has a host, it's likely to live in the community, particularly during the cool seasons where the transmissibility seems to be much easier for viruses. So I think it's quite plausible to expect a pretty rough road. But if anyone professes to be able to look down the road and tell you exactly what to expect, I would submit that they're very much mistaken.
So many backup plans.
The seasonal, that's why we really need people to do the seasonal, because if they mix, then we have a whole different situation.
Yeah, the viruses tend to intermix and trade their RNA. That's what they do very well. So we need to be taking this very seriously. And I hadn't heard that news thing. I'll be anxious to hear that. It goes back to the beginning slide in terms of evolving flexibility and fluidity associated with this event.
I have Mr. Rainey.
Thank you. A certain percentage of the students in Fairfax County are homeschooled. Do we have any plans, or does the health department have any plans to reach out to the students and parents involved in homeschooling?
The health department has town hall meetings going on right now, so they're meeting all over giving updates to the community members. The vaccine is available to those people that are in the categories. So we will have private health providers that will be providing vaccine. We will have health department providing that vaccine, and homeschoolers can access themselves of those sources just the way we will have school people doing. So the town hall meetings are how they're communicating with community members who are not in Fairfax schools.
Thank you very much for that informative presentation, and please remember to tell your kids to wash their hands, cough in their elbows, and let's take care of each other.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next order of business is citizen participation.